Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And it's early Saturday morning. What is this, the third or fourth Saturday in January? I've lost track. It is the 27th, I believe. The 27th of January. Do you realize we're almost a month into 2018? That's downright scary. Where did that time go? It seems like every day there is more confab, blow blast, uproar. But you know, I've gotten a lot of emails from readers saying, oh, I'm really concerned and everything's a mess and et cetera, et cetera. Yes, folks, everything is a mess. But you know, when you are reversing 40 years of progressive politics under both Democrats and Republicans, I might add, when you're turning around that ship, there's plates that are going to fall off the shelves. There's going to be the creaking of timbers and the groaning of the wooden gun rails as a frigate makes its turn in heavy seas. If I were you, I would delight in the chaos, because the chaos is for a reason. The chaos is because we're getting it together. There's a lot of bad stuff that's being reversed. You don't know the tenth of it. Trump is getting all sorts of things done, and that is the reason, really, that the left hates him, and that the never-Trumpers in the Republicans, you know, the Lindsey Grahams and the John McCains and the Jeb Bushes, did you see that pathetic interview on USA Today? It's a video of Jeb Bush. I believe it was yesterday, Friday. I am so glad he got bounced out of the primaries. But that is the sounds that you hear, the creaking of this big old ship, America, as she turns course. And it's going to be a messy, noisy, bouncy, upsetting, chaotic affair. And I think through the entire term of Donald Trump's first 4 years and hopefully his second 4 years. His second 4 years, I think, will settle down because the ship will have turned. And then we just kind of add coal to the engines. I have so much to cover with you this morning. I mean, even those of you who don't follow the news at all, and I think a lot of my audience at least follows it a little bit, so much happened this week that it's almost difficult to get your arms around. And there's all sorts of international stories that the press isn't covering whatsoever. You know, everybody has been fixated, well, the mainstream media has been fixated on whether Donald Trump thought about firing Robert Mueller. Well, of course he thought about firing Robert Mueller. What CEO of a big company doesn't think about firing some of his top-level people from time to time? So what? I mean, how do you make a story out of something that wasn't? Now, what we're going to be covering this morning just runs a gamut. But the two main segments are what has emerged in this deep state plot, this traitorous conspiracy that is far-reaching. I mean, the tentacles of traitorous conniving reach far beyond what even I thought was going on. And I'm the one who first brought you the whole concept of the shadow government. Type shadow government in the search bar and you'll see that I was jumping up and down about this and what Obama was doing by infiltrating the government with his hand-picked, ultra-left, progressive appointments, Islamist appointments. This is purposeful, folks. This corruption was inserted into our government by a corrupt administration intentionally, on purpose. one of the elements in his quote-unquote promised fundamental transformation of America, unquote. And that'll be the other major segment in this show, and that's immigration. Because there's a lot of jumping up and down and hand-wringing. I'm going to try and clear some of that up for you, although we have no idea what the final shape or form of that's going to be. I'm going to give you my theories on Donald Trump's surprising offer to legalize, give or take, 2 million quote-unquote dreamers. Because I think Donald Trump is crafty like a fox. And I think he set a trap for the Democrats and they fell right into it. But I'll tell you more about that when we get to that segment. We're also going to be talking tonight, this morning. It's dark out, folks. 2 o'clock in the morning. We're going to talk about John Kerry, who continues, he's an Obama guy. What do you expect? He continues the traitorous activities that he took on as a youth after he was swift boating. You remember all that uproar in Vietnam and how he threw his lot in with Hanoi Jane and against our troops way back when. Well, you know, a leopard doesn't change his spots. A progressive once is a progressive always. Oh, well, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Las Vegas shootings. More and more stuff starting to leak out of Las Vegas, which, believe it or not now, folks, is 4 months ago. And they have kept it under wraps. But, you know, the dam is beginning to burst there, too. And all the theories that I gave you back then, you can go back to the first 2 shows in October. I did probably one of the best compendiums in media of what happened in Vegas, what likely happened really in Vegas, and who the culprits really were. Stephen Paddock just being a pawn in that whole scheme. So I have some information to bring to you this morning on that too. And have you ever heard of, let's see if we get it right, the localism scheme where it comes to radio and how it could effectively take out AM radio talk? That's right, including this show. Excuse me. I'm fighting off a cold here. It has been windy. Maybe the sound engineers will get that edited out, at least for the podcast. You folks on AM, you're just going to have to put up with a sneeze once in a while. I got back to the ranch, just to digress a little bit from the menu tonight. I got back to the ranch late Monday, and it had snowed about 14 inches. You know, that's no big deal, and we get that relatively often. And we have a big old dump truck with a snowplow on it, and we have bobcats and all sorts of stuff. And it takes a couple hours, but we can usually clear the ranch road down from the main arch, the mile down to the house and into the barn area pretty quick. But the winds started Tuesday. And let me tell you, Wyoming is kind of a windy place. As a matter of fact, there's kind of a favorite saying in Wyoming. It ain't windy till the rocks move. Everything else is just a breeze. And sometimes that can be true. And it was really true Tuesday, Wednesday, and part of Thursday, because the winds blew. There had to be gusts of 80, but it was a pretty consistent 50 to 60 miles an hour. And it pushed that snow around like you can't believe. Yours truly, your erstwhile host, managed to get that big old plow I was just bragging about stuck in a 6-foot snowdrift about 100 yards from the house, from the ranch house. And it took me, my ranch hand was busy elsewhere, and it took me about 2 hours to inch it out backwards using our reach lift, which is a big old beast of a machine, with, of course, nobody behind the steering wheel of the snowplow. So it was kind of dicey because I had to inch it across this one spot where the road's only about 10 feet wide with a creek on either side. But I got it done, and the roads are clear, and the wind died down Thursday and yesterday, but I can hear it outside the ranch house right now in the dark, outside the studio. I'm actually broadcasting you from the ranch house today. I'm not in a studio anywhere. And I have a studio here at the house. I just didn't feel like driving anywhere this morning. You know what I mean? You know what I mean, Vern? Anyway, it was an interesting week digging out. I finally got the road plowed so that I could get the truck out from the house yesterday. That'll give you an idea. It was 4 days. So, been interesting. The other thing we're going to be covering this morning, or the other things we're going to be covering this morning, is, you know, pretty much how the media is playing all this. And I'm not going to dwell on it, but I'm going to bring you some glaring examples. And then, of course, we're going to be covering our whole little deep state fiasco here, the loss, the claimed loss by the FBI, which just, I mean, once you heard that, you just went, you're kidding me. And I'm going to tell you about all the times that when a government gets caught in corruption, when it gets caught in unconstitutional and traitorous actions by partisans within its ranks, all of them appointed by Obama, I might add, that they resort to the old, the dog ate my homework. I don't have the papers anymore. I can't find them. They got wiped out. There was a glitch in my phone. I took a hammer to my BlackBerry. I bleach bitted it, whatever. So, this is a pattern. This is not a one-off. And, you know, you have to wonder. I know, and we're going to talk a little bit about that memo tonight. I'm going to tell you what numbers to call, and you need to call them. Get that memo released. And that's the memo, of course, by the House Intel Committee, which outlines the illegal use of FISA search warrants by Obama operatives, by his plants, his deep state plants in his shadow government, that he and Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch and others set up. Anyway, we have a whole bunch to cover. We're also going to cover, if we have time, some other economic news. You know, I did a show 2 weeks ago. I got almost more emails than any time in the last year. I think the Vegas show, the show when I talked about Vegas and kind of pulled all that together, the shows after the election last year, the first few shows around Trump's inauguration, I got more letters on those shows than any show in the last several years. I did, however, get lots and lots of letters on my shows on the shadow government and on Obama's czars. And one of the things that we're going to be talking about this morning is this localism rule at the FCC, which could wipe out AM radio, basically wipe out conservative viewpoints that Obama put in place through his communications czar, his communications diversity czar, Mark Lloyd, whom I specifically talked about in my show on the czars. Just type in Obama czars, C-Z-A-R-S. You can listen to those shows from, wow, it's almost 4 years ago now. That's how long ago they were. And here we are, 4 years later, as I projected then, talking about the damage these alt-left, many of them communist, I mean, admittedly communist, Islamist, anti-American people that he had in the top layers of government. And we're kind of seeing that now, aren't we? It's like in your face. All right. I'm going to start the show off with a story. A story. And this is a true story. What do you think of that? But imagine yourself in this fairy tale land. Maybe it's a collection of countries. It's like a continent. And imagine that they make all sorts of horrible decisions. Some you can attribute to racking up their own power and wealth. Some you can attribute to some kind of ideology which is foreign to you. I mean, you just can't understand it. But other things, seemingly having nothing to do with some kind of weird ideology or some kind of personal gain, are just so bizarre. They're not. They're 2 + 2 = 5. Their water runs uphill. You just can't understand it because the decisions that are being made now, in some cases irreversible, they won't be able to reverse it, are going to affect their children and their children's children and their children's children's children. In other words, they're making decisions as if they had no children, as if they had no future legacy of their very own to promote. Kind of rudderless ships in a political sea. I mean, think about it. Think about if you didn't have kids. And I'm sure some of you, several million listeners, don't have kids. But I bet most of you do. Whether or not you're married, whether or not you're still married, kind of irrelevant. The fact is you have children. And you know, when you have children, I'm speaking from personal experience, and I think many of you there at home or in your cars listening to podcasts or tuned into the radio or the website, I think many of you will kind of nod your head in agreement when I say that when you have kids, it kind of changes your life. It changes your perspective, your outlook, your plans for the future, how you handle many matters, how you handle your money, how you handle your property. In the back of your mind is, well, I'm going to do this because it'll go to them. I'm going to do this because it gives them an opportunity. I'm going to do this because it's good for the grandkids. I mean, I know all of you are sitting there nodding going, yeah, I can think of dozens of decisions. You know, some of them are overt, some of them are subtle, but there's a definite and profound effect on how you think and what you do and what your perception of your future and, more importantly, the future of your family, your children, is. And in that case, and we all make stupid mistakes, right? And we all make live-for-today nonsense decisions. But let's face it, it has an impact. And for many of us, maybe all of us, it kind of reins you in on some of your decisions. Because you know those decisions are going to impact your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, and on down the line. And it's going to impact the country, their social situation, their freedoms, generations hence. I mean, it's one of the reasons I do this radio show. It's my way of giving back. It's why we have no commercials. And trust me, we could have lots of commercials. People contact me all the time. So think about that. Now think about Europe. Think about all the bad decisions Europe has made for probably 40 years. The same 40 years that the progressives were sucking us down the toilet. That we're trying to get our head out of right now. Think about their decisions on the European Union, where nations basically gave up their sovereignty to be some kind of confederation of nations. How's that worked? I mean, now it's falling apart. Secessionist movements, which I've talked about on previous shows, in Spain and Italy, the Brexit deal in England, Ireland maybe split. Yes, I can go down the list. Think about how it's worked for their economy. You have people who work, like in France, the average work week, I think, is either 33 or 35 hours. I mean, whatever. It's way less than the average work week here. Retirement age is less. Welfare programs are more. And their economy, while certainly better than Zimbabwe, I mean, their economy is nothing to jump up and down about. Think about all the wealth they have squandered to make people dependent upon government. I mean, in many ways, if you take what the Democrats have done in their states, New York and California and Illinois, Connecticut, and you take what the Democrats, the progressives, have done for the last 20, 30 years, 40 years, in some of the big cities, which are wastelands. Detroit, which is starting to come back a little bit. Chicago. Baltimore. I mean, I can go down the list. You're familiar with all the names. And apply that to a continent. You start getting the idea. Well, let me tell you, folks, there's a reason. This was sent to me, by the way, by one of my listeners. There's a reason that these crazy things are happening in Europe. That the crazy results of crazy things that happened in Europe 20 or 30 years ago are manifesting themselves today. That Europe has basically opened its borders, other than Hungary, the only smart ones. They actually built a wall. Gee, and it works. And they're not taking in any refugees or immigration. But take a look at Germany, where Angela Merkel has let in 1.2 million. This is in a country of 60 million. Has let in 1.2 million, and they continue to stream in Islamist or Islamic refugees. And they have rape-free zones in the big cities. Think about that. Rape-free zones, ladies. Rape-free zones. Where 1,000 women suffered sexual assaults at the hands of refugee gangs at one of what used to be premier music festivals in Munich last year. And there was another incident almost as bad this year. Think about all their terror attacks. I mean, I can go down the list. Well, it may interest you to know that there's a deep-seated reason above ideology, above left-leaning, one-for-all, all-for-one collectivism, above everything. Because you know that little fairy tale that I just told you about this continent in a galaxy far, far away? Well, that continent is Europe. This will shock you. Shock you. It shocked me. Europe's current political leadership. Now listen to this. Macron, the newly elected French president, has no children. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has no children. British Prime Minister Theresa May has no children. Italian Prime Minister Paolo Gentiloni has no children. Holland's Mark Rutte has no children. Sweden's Stefan Löfven has no children. Luxembourg's Xavier Bettel has no children. Scotland's Nicola Sturgeon has no children. Jean-Claude Juncker, oh boy, he's a piece of work. The head of the European Commission, i.e. the European Union, you know, the collective European Union that Britain and others are getting out of, has no children. Now, you have rulers in Europe, folks, who are making decisions basically about the future in which they have no personal stake. Think about that. Think about that. Now, tie that into what the left is doing here with abortions, with its assault upon the families, faith, the Constitution, the indoctrination of children, the promotion to millennials, many of which have no children, about how it's not important to have children. It's pretty scary. It explains a lot. And it's a fact that I didn't know, but I thought that it was startling enough to bring it to your attention. It explains a lot. And that is my story, a true story and a scary story for this morning. Okay, let's talk about, oh God, there's a million things we could talk about here. Let's talk about going down the list. I got so much stuff over my desk and counter here in the studio that, I mean, it's like Paperville. I can't even see it. That's how much stuff has happened just in the last week. One of the things I'll tell you, by the way, when I get to that segment, don't jump ahead if you're on the website. You will see more articles than normal. I mean, it is packed with articles on theRightSide.com, particularly packed under the category treason. And some of the things I'm going to be talking about tonight, those articles are right there. You can read the various text messages and such that I'm referring to for yourself. They're actually clips of the texts themselves between traitorous Strzok and traitorous Gray, the the lovers who were married, except not to each other, while they were committing treason, both in their investigation and, so far, exoneration of Hillary Clinton and her little cabal of crooks and felons, Mills, Aberdeen, Podesta, you name it, and Barack Obama. Because Barack Obama's in this up to his eyeballs. And I told you a year ago, I told you that eventually the trails would lead to Obama. And here they come, folks. Here they come. We'll be talking about that as we go through the morning here. But let's start off with localism, because I think that's kind of an interesting, a little interesting segment that won't take too long. So, Mark Lloyd, Obama appointed a bunch of czars. You know, he had a regulatory czar, and he had a job czar, and he had this the czar and that czar. Go back and listen to my shows. I got every one of them, give you their names, tell you about their sordid leftist, elitist, globalist backgrounds. And one of the guys that he had was Mark Lloyd. And Mark Lloyd came up with a plan that he called localism. Rush Limbaugh himself, by the way, quote, "The way they're going to get rid of conservative talk radio is with localism," unquote. It was also covered widely on Radio America. So Mark Lloyd was appointed the FCC diversity officer. Oh, there's that word, diversity. Before that, he was a senior fellow. Oh, isn't that wonderful? A senior fellow. At the very far left, I mean, like so left, their left shoulder hits the ground when they walk. The Center for American Progress. Now, you know who the director was? It was John Podesta, Hillary's campaign manager. And do you know who was funded by? That's right, George Soros through his Open Society Foundation. Anyway, when he was at the Center for American Progress, our buddy Lloyd wrote a report. And it was basically, specifically, how to backdoor FCC regulations to shut down conservative radio. And it was meant to be a doctrine, if you will, that would replace the fairness doctrine, which was a doctrine originally implemented to shut down conservative radio that failed, pretty much because of George Bush and who he had on the FCC. The Fairness Doctrine, very quickly, because it's kind of kaput, said you have to give equal time to different political views. In other words, if you have radio stations in your area, you may be listening to one right now. If you have radio stations in your area that are mostly conservative, conservative talk radio, conservative commentators, conservative morning and evening drive time hosts, those radio stations under the Fairness Doctrine would have had an equal amount of time for liberal or left radio hosts and nationally syndicated shows and all that kind of stuff. That didn't work. So Lloyd devised, you know, but that's what Obama was good. He was good at finding the cracks or creating the cracks and then filling them with his leftist mortar, right? Lloyd's proposal, I'll boil it down for you, was, I'll quote, quote, "We trace the rise and influence of Rush and other conservative radio hosts to relax ownership rules and other pro-big business regulation that destroyed localism. We call for the ownership," in other words, national, you know, he's against national syndication of conservative talk shows. I'll boil that down for you. "We call for the ownership rules that we think will create greater local diversity of programming, news, and commentary." Let me give you the code words, folks. More left thinking, less right thinking. "And we call for more localism by putting teeth into the licensing rules." In other words, what he did, let me give you an example. So Operation Choke Point, you can type that in the search bar and listen to my shows on that, had to do with gun control. This was under Eric Holder. It was directed by Obama and Valerie Jarrett. And since they couldn't get gun laws passed, what they did instead was go after the financial institutions that financed gun manufacturers, gun stores, etc., etc., etc. And they basically went into these banks and illegally, unconstitutionally said, you know, we're going to give you a lot of grief when the federal auditors come in next year. We're going to write you up for all sorts of violations and fine you. If you don't, or if you continue to, have anything to do with gun manufacturer X or firearms dealer Y or gun store Z. In other words, they went to choke off the money to all the gun manufacturers, gun dealers, and gun stores. And later on, they tried to get ammunition. In other words, they couldn't win by frontal assault, so the leftists do what they do. Right? Saul Alinsky. The end justifies the means. They illegally interfered with a necessary block in the chain, the endpoint of which they wanted to influence. And what Mark Lloyd did was, in the true progressive alt-left Obama corrupt administration era, he came up with a way to get around the fact that the fairness doctrine wasn't working. And that was called localism. And I just read you his own words and what he was trying to do. Lloyd is the one who urged Obama to use the FCC basically to eradicate any and all political opposition to liberalism. Not by getting rid of shows, but by going to owners, but number one, controlling the ownership of radio stations, and number two, fining radio stations to abandon conservative commentary or face punishment, quote unquote. What he suggested, by the way, was that radio stations that didn't comply with the localism rules could be fined up to $250 million. Think about that now. Think about your local radio station. Those of you who are listening, those of you who are listening on podcast or on the website or elsewhere, think about the local radio station, which unfortunately doesn't carry this show. You should raise hell and tell them to carry it. Think about that little radio station or that big radio station. I mean, $250 million is like, that would kind of hurt NBC, never mind, you know, XYZA in Oshkosh. $250 million fine. He further suggested that that fine, the proceeds of these fines, go from these, go unjustly to National Public Radio, NPR. Does that kind of tell you where they think NPR sits? Yes, absolutely. You know, I used to be a big listener of NPR. This is 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And I noticed it going further and further left. And I hardly ever listen to it anymore, which is a shame because I used to enjoy it. So Obama created a brand new position at the FCC, right? Nah, didn't go to Congress, didn't do squat, just create a new position. Chief Diversity Officer, and Mark Lloyd was slithering into that spot. After he was appointed, let me give you a quote by Mark Lloyd. Quote, "It should be clear by now that my focus here is not freedom of speech or the press. That freedom is all too often an exaggeration," unquote. Oh, does that kind of give you a clue as to where these guys come from? Paragraph 25, you can look this up online if you want, of Mark Lloyd's FCC rule changes. Paragraph 25 was titled Community Advisory Boards. Community Advisory Boards. What was Barack Obama? Oh, that's right, a community organizer. So here they were going to kind of community organizing at the radio level, at the broadcast level. And to make a long story short, they almost got it done. Now, localism was not implemented. However, localism remains as a rule, along with community advisory boards. In other words, you would handpick liberal members of a community to determine if a if there was a proper localism in the community's radio stations, and if not, and they didn't correct it, they'd get hit with this $250 million fine, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That was never implemented. It was blocked by the FCC, who at that time was still had a brain, because some of the terms of the conservative free speech folks, fortunately, did not allow Obama to appoint the entire board. But he still did damage. My point is that localism rules, community advisory board rules that were set up by Obama, part of his deep state tactics, part of his shadow government tactics, are still at the FCC. When you have a chance, write this down. You should drop a line to your senator and your congressman and tell them to get rid of the localism rule and tell someone to the White House. He can do this by Trump can do this by executive order. The localism rule at the FCC needs to be gone. Toast. Over with. That doesn't mean the next leftist president, and there will be one sometime, particularly, I might add, if this immigration stuff goes through, but that's yet another segment this morning. Tell them to get rid of localism. The localism rule at the FCC and community advisory boards needs to go away. At least we will create the step for the next alt-left Islamist that he'll have to start from scratch so that we can have eyeballs on it. Otherwise, this rule will remain in place, folks. Lefties will get in. They will turn the FCC lefty. And the FCC will take this localism rule out of its rule books, dust it off, and implement it. And then you won't be listening to me except maybe on podcast. And you won't be listening to Sean or Rush or Mark or anybody else. So it's worth a sentence or two to the White House, to your senators, and to your congressmen. Okay, the next thing we're going to talk about this morning, Las Vegas. So if you go back to my shows in early October, you can just type Las Vegas in the search bar. They'll all come up. And by the way, I want to compliment the webmasters from the stations and the producers who do such a great job of posting these articles, keeping the website going. Has a fabulous search engine. I mean, really is great. I don't care what you type in there. Any current event topic and all those shows will come up. I think you'll enjoy them. Along with the articles of those shows, I might add. It's really kind of interesting to listen to a show from 4 years ago and feel how eerily prescient it was relative to the situation we find ourselves in today. You know, I'm just a Wyoming hayseed, but 2 + 2 = 4 and water flows downhill. It ain't hard if you got two brain cells and you can rub them together. So I said in those shows back in October, and I'm not going to get into all the details, but I came to a conclusion. The conclusion was, unequivocally, there was more than one shooter. Unequivocally, Stephen Paddock, whatever his involvement, however many people he may or may not have killed by may or may not shooting, Stephen Paddock had help. There were other shooters. It was part of a much larger plan and conspiracy. He was an Antifa alt-leftist dedicated to violence against conservatives, and they were aided, abetted, trained, and perhaps the whole incident was planned by Islamists, particularly ISIS. It was a joint alt-left Islamist operation. If you remember, ISIS has claimed credit 4 times for that attack, which, of course, our FBI, oh, we can trust them, has poo-pooed. And we know that it's been absolute silence out of Vegas for starting a week after the shooting that left just under 60 dead and 550 wounded. I mean, the press they're not even out interviewing these poor people who got wounded to see how they're doing. And you don't think the press is in collusion here? Wow. Anyway, there's been, and I've been posting articles. They're all posted, by the way, under terror. I should have almost done a separate category for Las Vegas. It was that horrific an event. But they're all posted under terror. If you go back through the last, well, I think I've had at least one article and maybe more than one posted in almost every show since October under terror. Because that's what it was. It may have been committed by an American Islamist, but it was alt-left Islamist unholy alliance killing. And the more I hear about it, the more tidbits I see on it, and some of them I post weekly under terror so that you can read them for yourselves, although I haven't talked about Vegas for 2 or 3 weeks, the more I am convinced that my hypothesis, which I formed, I must tell you, within minutes of hearing about that shooting, and my intuition, my guts were stronger and stronger with every passing minute, with every bit of information. If you go back through the shows, you'll see videos that were shot by third parties, I mean innocent civilians, that clearly show muzzle flashes at various places in the hotel. I tied it in for you, I believe, if you type in Saudi Arabia, I believe the show will come up. Sometime 2 or 3 months ago, I tied it into you with the unrest in Saudi Arabia and how this was a cover for an assassination attempt on the heir apparent to King Faisal of Saudi Arabia, who was not his son. The son was behind the terror attack. How it was an assassination attempt of the next king of Saudi Arabia, who was in Las Vegas at the time. And then, of course, all the articles and eyewitness, dozens and dozens and scores of eyewitness accounts of helicopters and, you know, all sorts of weird stuff. Now, you know, if one person says, I think I heard a helicopter, or I saw a helicopter, or I saw, you know, heavily armed, fully uniformed military getting into helicopters who flew off with no lights. If one person says that, but when, you know, you have 30, 40, 50, 60, 100 people coming forward with the same information who don't know each other, there's something to it. Something to it. Well, this past week, a previously sealed FBI affidavit was released. And, of course, the press didn't cover it at all, right? I mean, have you even heard about this other than on this show? No. And let me tell you that of all the hundreds and hundreds of sources I combed through, left, right, in between, you name it, international, military, non-military, government, non-government, sources that I combed through every week to bring you this show, I only found it in one obscure article, which, by the way, is posted, I believe, under treason. So, this previously sealed FBI affidavit, I mean, sealed? Really? FBI? Are these the guys who lost the texts? Okay. Not a very transparent FBI do we have right now. Anyway, the FBI special agent in charge, his name is Burke, basically says, quote, offenses have been committed by Stephen Paddock, Marilu Danley. Do you remember we were told that his girlfriend had nothing to do with this? She was over in the Philippines. She was innocent. Well, not so much. And others yet unknown, unquote. Really? Really? And there's all sorts of things that come to light in here. I'll probably post those articles next week because it is too jammed this week. But we come to find out that contrary to all the hoopla we were originally fed, The Mandalay Bay rooms where the shooting took place, number one, are not the original rooms that were checked into by Steve Paddock. Those rooms adjoined rooms 34 and 35. And he checked in under the name of his girlfriend, Mary Lou, baby. You know, the one that the FBI and the Sheriff's Department told us had nothing to do with this. But the shooting came from the rooms next door, which a few days after he checked in under Mary Lou's name, he had also taken out. In other words, he controlled a lot of that floor under various names, including his not-so-innocent girlfriend. And they have, by the way, found her fingerprints on magazines and stuff. She helped him load up the magazines for this act. Now remember, she's Philippines. What are Philippines? Oh, that's right. Philippines have a huge Islamist problem. Active ISIS, active Al-Qaeda, gun battles between Philippine troops and Islamists on islands and outlying enclaves. Huh. Must be a coincidence. We now find out that room 34 and room 35 had a locking door between them. We've all been in hotel rooms, right, where like there's a door in the wall and it's a locking door to the next room. I know you've seen them. Well, that's what they had. Now, the funny thing about this is that that door could only be locked from the 135 room side. Now, riddle me this, Batman. How did Stephen Paddock, who purportedly committed suicide and was found dead next to the broken-out window with the stage, I've talked about this too, with stage guns around him, and I've given you photos. How did he rise from the dead, go through the wall between 34 and 35, and lock the door on the 35 side after he had shot himself twice, supposedly, in the head with a pistol? Well, obviously, folks, he didn't and he couldn't. Which means there was at least a second person in those rooms shooting from the broken out window in 35. Period. There is no other explanation. He sure as hell didn't go out in the hall and go through there. And he couldn't have done either if he was dead with two quote-unquote self-inflicted bullet holes in his head by his purportedly own hand. Makes you think that maybe those two bullet holes weren't by him. Maybe they were by somebody else who made sure he wasn't around to talk about things and then went into the adjoining 35 room, locked the door, continued to shoot, and then escaped with all the commotion and the police in 34. Who knows? Who knows? Here's what we do know. There was a lot going on that night that we don't know. And I'm going to stay on this story until we do know. But read that article. I think you'll find it kind of fascinating. And read the articles next week. And by the way, in weeks past, I believe that this article, I'm looking at the paper copy of it right now. This article also talks about, by the way, that there's some emails. There were emails between Paddock and an unknown email account. called centralpark4804@gmail. centralpark4804@gmail.com. They're tracking that down, but they haven't found the owner yet. Another kind of weird thing, isn't it? You know, there are ways when you are really sophisticated, either a government actor or a really sophisticated non-government actor, to have, like, you send an email through email account A, who's, it's filtered by B, by C, by D, by E, by F, by who knows how many, until finally it disgorges to its intended recipient, in this case Paddock, from email account Z. So it's like almost impossible to trace back to an original email account or IP address. It's kind of like those robocalls you get on your cell phone. Boy, don't they just tick you off? Where every time you block the marketing number, the phone rings again because they've rolled over to some new number. And even if you call them back because you want to bitch at them, and tell them to never call you again, or you're going to track them down. The number's disconnected 10 seconds after you got a call from it. That kind of thing. But some of the emails are really bizarre. Listen to this. Quote, try an AR, right? AR-15. Try an AR before you buy. We have a huge selection located in the Las Vegas area, unquote. Then there's another email that came back from Central Park, the Central Park address. Quote, we have a wide variety of optics and ammunition to try, unquote. And then there's an email from Paddock to this account. Quote, for a thrill, try out bump fire ARs with a 100-round magazine, unquote, which, of course, is exactly what the perps used. Kind of fascinating. You'll see in this article, too, there's a room diagram that I'm talking about of these two rooms on the 32nd floor and the locking door between them. The mysterious locking door that got locked from the other side of the body of the man who supposedly committed suicide moments before the police, 1 hour late, broke down the door with explosives. Okay. Las Vegas will be on this show for quite a while, folks, because I think it's going to be quite a while before we find out what really, really occurred there. Or should I say, until I have the proof to conclusively prove, rather than simply support, the hypothesis that I formed literally the day after, the show after the shooting. The next thing we're going to talk about is John Kerry, old Swifty himself, the Swift Boat King. You know, the Hanoi Jane collaborator, the anti-American troop, anti-American scurrilous guy who, as I've reported before, gets a $50,000 a month allowance. This guy is such a wuss. Gets a $50,000 a month allowance from his wife, who happens to be the heiress to Heinz Ketchup. Now, you guys out there who are thinking about this, I'm sure there's some of you that would take the check. But really, what self-respecting man would accept a monthly allowance from his wife? From his wife's fortune? Really? Seriously? Seriously? All right. Anyway, John Kerry, who was, of course, Barry Obama's Secretary of State. Gee, here we're back to Barry again. Now, we know Barry didn't like Israel, and we know Barry liked the Palestinians. We know that Barry, there was another report, I think I had it on last week's show, under international or under scandal, or maybe even under treason, where Barry had spent millions of our taxpayer dollars to try and influence the Israeli elections. This is the Barry along with Samantha Powers, right? The UN ambassador that he appointed who illegally unmasked 300 people, which we now find out were pursuant to illegal and fraudulent FISA court orders, which were predicated upon the Russian dossier that Hillary Clinton paid for, that Peter Strzok blessed. I mean, wow. You can go down all these dots that they're like, it makes your eyes cross. I mean, my hair is curling under my headphone microphone right now. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. But John Kerry, our Secretary of State, you know, the guy who did the Iran deal for Barry. The guy who, after the big terror attack in Europe, didn't bother to go march with the other leaders to show solidarity. Instead, like the Thursday after the attack, he goes over with, I forget the guy's name, whatever. You'd know it in a minute, and I'll recall it in a second. And James Taylor. He goes over with James Taylor, and James Taylor plays a song. Wow. I mean, pathetic. Just pathetic. He was so pathetic. Maybe one of the worst Secretary of States this country has ever, ever, ever had, and we've had some really bad ones over the last 230 years. So John Kerry is over in the Mideast or in a European capital, who knows where, it doesn't matter. He's not in the country. And he meets with one of the top lieutenants of the president of the Palestinians. And he tells them, this is just this week, it's 4 days ago, you can dial up the video. The article here is posted on the On the Right Side website. And he tells them, don't give in. Remember, Trump has been positioning, he's had Jared Kushner working on this. He's been positioning all the players for some kind of Mideast peace breakthrough, which of course would save thousands of lives, maybe tens of thousands, who knows how many. Not that John Kerry or Barack Obama cares about somebody else's life. They killed 1 million people between them. 500,000 in Syria alone through their policies. And Libya and Africa and, you know, Iraq. And I can go on and on and on. All avoidable or mostly avoidable at the very least. And they killed 4 guys in Benghazi. And they killed 30 SEALs on Extortion 17. I've brought you that story too. Just put in Extortion 17. In the search bar. 30 Navy SEALs. That was on purpose, folks. That was no accident. Right after Osama bin Laden was killed. Coincidentally, by SEAL Team 6, and coincidentally, all 30 SEALs who were on one chopper, contrary to every regulation in the book, were from SEAL Team 6. There are no coincidences in this game. Have you noticed? Is that becoming really apparent as this onion of corruption and traitorous action is peeled back at the FBI and the DOJ right now with Peter Strzok and Linda Gray's text messages and illegal FISA warrants and the Russian dossier by Hillary and the whole nine yards? There are no coincidences, period. Anyway, John Kerry tells the Palestinian to go back to the President Chabad and tell him to hang tough. Don't listen to Trump. Don't do anything Trump says. Don't you worry about it. Don't you worry about Trump cutting off your funding. Don't you worry about Trump moving the capital to Jerusalem. Don't sit down with the Jews. You just hang tough. Because Trump's not going to be in office for more than a year. And a whole bunch of other crap. So here we have one of the, let's face it, the peace attempts, other than Jimmy Carter, you know, I'm not a big fan of Jimmy Carter. In fact, I'm not a fan of Jimmy Carter at all. But the one thing he did get done was that peace between Israel and Egypt. That's the one thing he really did get done, and it's quite startling, and it's lasted all these years through a number of governments, both in Israel and, more violently, in Egypt. And that peace was the predicate, the foundation of the peace between Jordan and Israel also. So, Jimmy Carter did get something done. But after Jimmy Carter, nothing got done. And under Barry Obama, all the weight shifted to the Arabs, the Islamists, and the undercover soldiers of Iran, which we know as Hezbollah. With Barry funneling American tax dollars to the Palestinians, which they funneled into Hamas, and to Iran, which they funneled into Hezbollah, and him bringing up, if you remember, in that last month or two before he left office, the first time in 50 years since the formation of the State of Israel, that he blindsides Israel with a Security Council resolution that the United States does not block, that calls on Israel to give up all its lands that it conquered in wars that its neighbors started against it, which at one point would leave Israel, if it went back to its original boundaries, 12 miles wide between Syria and the sea. 12 miles. Almost indefensible. And here we have John Kerry undermining Trump's peace initiative, Trump's, it's a chess game. On one hand, the Jerusalem announcement for the new American embassy. On the other hand, cutting out funding at the UN for the Palestinians, cutting down funding from the U.S. to the Palestinians. Sitting down with Netanyahu and telling him he's going to have to give. In other words, kind of beating up both sides around the ears. Reminding them of what America could or could not do to help or hurt them. Hoping that is, and I'm quite sure of this, the catalyst for them getting together and engaging their brain cells. And here's John Kerry undermining it all. Read that article. That will give you a little clue into Barack Obama, John Kerry, Hillary Clinton, who happened to be John Kerry's predecessor. Susan Rice, Ben Rhodes, you know, the National Security Council. Oh, how scary. All right, let's go on to the next segment. Because talking about John Kerry leaves a bad taste in my mouth. So I talked a little bit about the beginning of the show about how Trump's getting like a zillion things done that you never hear about. I mean, I don't care whether you listen to conservative press, down the middle of the road press, or left press, and certainly not the mainstream media because they are not the press. They are scalawags and scoundrels and ideologues. They are part of the deep state. But the reason the left is freaking out is Trump is a success, folks. You got to understand, if Trump was failing, the left wouldn't be wasting their time on him. The more they beat on him, the more successful he is. In fact, you can measure the amount of alarm and the amount of vicious, abrasive vitriol that's directed at him by how well they think he's doing. Have you noticed since he got the tax law passed, and since all then there was like another 10 companies this week, including Starbucks, who I'm not a fan of, and AT&T, hundreds of thousands of workers more getting raises, $1,000 to $2,500 bonuses, huge contributions or additional contributions to their health care, and on and on and on. And the more success that is apparent in Trump's policies and actions and his dismantling of the Obama alt-left / Islamist deep state, the more panicked and nasty the left becomes. So when the left stops being nasty, start worrying about it, because then Trump's not doing well. So what you may not know, in fact, I'm positive you don't know, because nobody else is talking about it. And I talked about how he had planned to decrease the size of government. This is a year ago. Decrease the size of government through attrition. He was smart enough not to bounce a whole bunch of people, because that would be an uproar and it would kind of tip his hand. And the clever developer that he is, the businessman who has to think way down the road in order to build a skyscraper, he decided he could slice this government into pieces by just using its own weight against it. And sure enough, by the end of September, it's now come out, every cabinet position, every agency department, except Homeland Security, Veterans Affairs, and Interior, had fewer permanent staff than when Trump took office in January. That means at each of these outfits, many hundreds of employees left. In some cases, like the EPA, thousands of employees have left. Almost 4,000 as I speak to you this morning. By the way, the Washington Post, of all the places, figured it out and actually did an article on it, which is kind of interesting. I think they were raising the alarm for the other lefties. Trump laid out big spending cuts in the spring, which included decreases in funding of 30% of some of these agencies. Well, of course, Congress didn't go for it, but little do they know, Trump is getting his way because Everybody who leaves these agencies, or virtually everybody, is not being replaced. And you know, when you at the EPA, I believe they had 16,000 employees at their zenith. That's double what they were at their zenith under Barry and the previous questionable EPA administrator. You know, the gal that let 3 million gallons of toxic waste out in Colorado and had the environmental disaster again via her contractors and staff in California. I mean, I can go on and on. I won't bore you. We got too much to cover this morning. But that agency is down a quarter in its workforce. And you know, in the government where the average salary, this is scary, is $100,000 plus all sorts of benefits. I mean, benefits in most cases ranging from 25 to 40% more than your base salary. I mean, put the pen to that. 4,000 people and an average of 140 grand a year, all in compensation. That's a big cut. And you know, you don't need their computers, and you don't need their office space, and you don't need, you know, it's all tied in. The overhead drops dramatically. So even though Congress wasn't going to agree to these huge cuts in a number of these departments and agencies, Trump's getting his way by his original plan, which was simply attrition. And he doesn't have to face any headlines. By the way, this is leading up to where I think we're at on immigration. This is how crafty this guy is that we hired. And that's what we did. We didn't elect him. We hired him. Barack Obama got elected. George Bush got elected. Bill Clinton got elected. Donald Trump, we hired. There's a big difference. And we hired him exactly for this type of expertise that Washington is not used to and hasn't seen and really can't fathom how to react to. Now he's playing his hand even more. So after coming out with these 30% reductions, Congress saying no way, him getting his way anyway through this attrition and a number of other cost-saving steps without facing headlines, Donald Trump lays off 4,000 people at the EPA. Well, you know, Donald Trump laid off 4,000 people at the EPA, but there's no headlines because the people walked out the door on their own, and he kind of helped them do it, and he didn't replace them. Now he's warning all these agencies to brace for even deeper cuts in the 2019 budget. He has imposed a hiring freeze across the board in the federal government, other than certain select positions. I mean, across the board in the federal government, other than, I think, defense. In fact, he's being so effective. Let me read you a quote from Tony Reardon, who's the president of the National Treasury, you know, Department of the Treasury, National Treasury Employees Union. Quote, morale has never been lower. Government is making itself a lot less attractive as an employer. Unquote. Go Donald. Go Donald. Let me give you a comparison. In the first 9 months of Obama being in office in 2009, he added 68,000, that's 68,000, multiply that by the 140,000, 68,000 permanent federal employees. Thanks, Barry. I'm sure we needed them all. You know, that's when he started the deep state and the shadow government, folks. He didn't waste any time putting his little plan into motion. And we're dealing with some of them right now. During Trump's first 9 months in office, right to September, I gave you some of those figures, the federal bureaucracy has gone down by 16,000 bureaucrats. That, folks, is an 82,000 person difference between the two presidents. 82,000 people difference at 140,000 average each per year salary and benefits. By the way, you'll be glad to know that as part of that drop, the Internal Revenue Service, you know, the service of Lois Lerner under Obama. The Internal Revenue Service lost 6,801 permanent staffers in the first 9 months of 2017, which is a drop of almost 9% of their staff, and they ain't been replaced. Ha! I almost feel like smoking a cigarette after going over that segment. Was it good for you too? All right. Let's go to the next segment. Daylight's wasting, as they say on the range. So, over the last week, we had the spectacle. We learned that there were 10,000, 50,000. I mean, there's all sorts of numbers. Why don't we say somewhere north of 10,000 text messages between Peter Strzok, our traitorous counterintelligence, head of counterintelligence FBI guy, and his lover, Gray, with whom he was having an affair at the time. Both of them, of course, were married to other people. And Gray was the attorney for Andrew McCabe, the second in command of the FBI under Crooked Comey. And I believe under Crooked Mueller, too. So we have found out a bunch of stuff this week. You know, I'm not going to go over the whole thing with you. I think my audience pretty much has a feel for the general threads of this. At some point, I'll do a show when the dust settles a little bit and all the facts that we're going to get come out. And I'll tie it all neatly together for you in a bundle of understandable corruption and traitorous behavior in bullet points. But I think you got the general gist, right? The Russian collusion thing is bogus. It is the insurance policy that Strzok was talking about in his text in case Donald Trump got elected. There was a secret society that included Strzok. I have an article on this. That included Strzok and judges, federal judges, former attorney generals. Gee, could that be Lynch and Holder? Members of the CIA, a secret society that met off campus. In other words, that met at non-governmental offices or locations to continue their plot. This is sedition, folks. Sedition. You know, if you don't like in a republic whom you work for and get paid for, when you are appointed by the people who are elected in that republic, by the constituents, if you have a problem with a higher-up and you don't like a president, which is your prerogative, you can like or not like a president. If you dislike him or her or whatever enough, you resign. You go do something else. You don't hang in there and purposely and intentionally with premeditation and a elaborate plan. You don't hang in there to help one candidate over another or undermine a presidency to the risk and peril of the republic and its people whom you serve and who pay you. This is pretty elementary. Pretty elementary. But we have the spectacle of the FBI... of the FBI trying to tell us that they lost all the key emails between December 13th, 2016, right after Trump's election, and May 9th, 2017, the day after Mueller is appointed by Rosenstein to be the special prosecutor on the Russian collusion, which we now know through these text messages and other revelations, they knew was bogus to begin with and didn't exist, and which they absolutely knew was predicated on both a dossier, the Fusion GPS dossier, that they had illegally and fraudulently used to obtain FISA, that is, you know, surveillance warrants, on Trump, his staff, his transition staff, and before that, his campaign and certain campaign members. and then use that illegal surveillance to trap General Flynn into a purported falsehood. I mean, it's just unbelievable. We are then told this last week that the text messages between Gray and Strzok, and I've talked about them in previous shows, their text messages, that is, the insurance policy and their hatred of Trump and their love of Hillary and all that kind of stuff. Those 5 months of text messages were lost. They can't be found. They were deleted. They never got to the FBI server because there was something wrong with the Samsung phones. And I mean, read the articles under the treason section. I urge you, please. I can only devote so many minutes to it in this show. I am limited to an hour and a half on most stations, and sometimes I go over that, and folks have to come to the website or the podcast to listen to the last half hour, but, you know, you can't fit it all in. If I'm going to have any kind of control of time here, I'm going to give you the broad brush on this stuff. It's so extensive. I really urge you to at least skim the articles under treason this week on onthewrightsideradio.com. There is a bunch of them. But when they're done, not only will you be sick to your stomach and madder than hell, you'll have a pretty good feel for what kind of shenanigans are and have been going on to the detriment of our Constitution and our Republic, and to the detriment of you and me and our children. Remember how I started off this show? And to our children's children. Anyway, this is a pattern, folks. This attempt by the FBI, and I want to know who at the FBI, that is the Trump FBI now, that has a director appointed by Trump, but unfortunately still has as employees that were paying McCabe and Strzok and Gray and others. I want to know where these people came from. I want to know who specifically said they had lost all the text messages between Gray and Strzok in those 5 critical months. Aren't you curious about that? How come I haven't heard that name anywhere, but I want to know. Because guess what? That's another shadow government guy or gal. We come to find out in this week, by the way, those lost text messages that couldn't be recovered, that never got into the server, that were lost forever because of problems with Samsung and all that kind of stuff. You know, those text messages, guess what? The Inspector General, God bless him, he managed to recover those in about 2 days. So what did we learn by that? We learned that the Inspector General over there is on the ball. We learned that the Inspector General, who gave 1.2 million pages of documents to Congress last week, from which a 4-page memo, I'm going to talk about that in a moment, has been put together by the House Intelligence Committee, mostly Devin Nunes, its chairman. And now there's another big fight over that. We'll get to that. This IG is for real. This IG is good. This IG is an American. This IG understands the Constitution. And this IG believes in the oath he took to serve the people who are the government. That's you and me. Of the people, by the people, for the people. We are the government. Not Peter Strzok. Not Linda Gray. Not Andrew McCabe. Not Valerie Jarrett. Not Barack Obama. Nobody. Us. We are the boss. This IG gets it. Hats off to him. Big round of applause. An honest guy with power in Washington, D.C. Unbelievable. And don't think he hasn't gotten death threats. I hope they got some Secret Service around him who are loyal to Trump. In any event, we now have their text messages for the 5 months. They just started reading them over here yesterday, Friday. And they're in those text messages are admissions that they knew Hillary was crooked, but they were going to let her go. There's admissions that they were scared of her, so they didn't want to ruffle her feathers because she'd get back at them when she was elected president. There's more damning things about Trump. There's admissions in them that the chief investigator for the Mueller deal, which was Strzok till Mueller fired him, I think for show, that Strzok admitted there was no there. In fact, the exact words was, there is no big there. That's his exact text. He wasn't even sure he wanted to join the Mueller investigation. You read the text messages, go to the treason deal. They're all there for you. He wasn't even sure he wanted to be involved with the Mueller investigation to begin with, because after 10 months of investigating himself on Trump and being a Russian expert, he had found no evidence whatsoever. There was no there. But then you'll find in later texts, a day or two later, he begins to think, hey, wait a minute. If I get involved with Mueller, I might be able to at least be involved in an investigation that we could at least bring to impeachment. Never mind criminal activity. We'll get the guy impeached because I hate him and I'm a globalist and I love Hillary and I let her off the hook. I mean, it's enough to make you want to just retch. Retch. So we have a pattern here, folks. Number one, in this last week, we have the supposedly they never happened, and if they happened, they've been lost, and if they've been lost, we can't retrieve them. Text messages. And now that we have them, thanks to the IG, 2 days after the FBI said they didn't exist, we find out why they didn't want us to have them. But remember when Hillary Clinton, while under subpoena, deletes 33,000 emails from her illegal, felonious, in all sorts of ways, private server? Do you remember the emails that were subpoenaed related to Benghazi, specifically about the whereabouts of Barack Obama and why help wasn't sent to those four poor Americans on the roof fighting to save their comrades, two of whom lost their lives? Yep, those emails disappeared too. I'm not sure they've been recovered yet, as a matter of fact. Lost in the bowels of the deep state that Hillary appointed in the State Department, or that Comey appointed in the FBI, or that Brennan appointed in the CIA. Gee, all three of them were appointed by Obama. Must be a coincidence. Oh, and then you remember when Lois Lerner, appointed by, I forget the guy's name now, the head of the IRS who was appointed by Obama. Another coincidence. Lois Lerner, who targeted all the conservative groups prior to the 2012 unfortunate re-election of Barry, so that they couldn't participate in the election. Later, fully admitted by the IRS and millions of our taxpayer dollars. I mean, how ironic is this? Paid out to those groups just in the last 6 months. So, Lois Lerner, who pleaded the fifth five times in congressional hearings, Lois Lerner, who committed a number of felonies and treasonous acts, who took early retirement, geez, sounds like McCabe there at the FBI, and is now getting a pension paid for by us. Oh, man, I have to take a deep breath here. Om. Imagine me cross-legged on the studio floor with my palms up and incense burning, relaxing, because it really pissed me off. Does it piss you off, folks? Yes, anyway, so Lois Lerner's 24,000 subpoenaed emails were all accidentally lost, couldn't find them. Ah, think about this, Judicial Watch, finally, who was Russell representing the people who won the lawsuit against the IRS just in the last 6 months, and the IRS admitted everything, blah, 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 blah. They were found. Wow, they weren't lost. They weren't permanently, you know, Hillary's 33,000 emails are out there somewhere too, folks. You know that, right? And one of these days we're going to see them. And let me tell you, That's going to blow the lid off some people's heads. Oh, and then Hillary's email archive. Oh, yes. The 2013 archive. You probably haven't heard of this. The 2013 archive of Hillary's infamous emails was lost in the mail. The USPS. The archive was on a laptop and a thumb drive, and it was put in the U.S. mail from Joe to Blow, and it just disappeared. Poof, poof, gone. Yep. Not only the emails, but the archive of all communications. Just gone. Boom. There's other things. I'm just giving you a couple examples here. But on this latest one, we have an honest IG who basically, instead of us waiting, like in the case of Lois Lerner, to get the emails 2 years after they were supposedly irretrievable, gone forever, blah, 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 he got them 2 days. I want to know who at the FBI said they were gone. That's what I want to know. And I want to know who told him to say they were gone. And what do you want to bet? It's Straczynski, who was the counsel, the FBI counsel who suddenly resigned last week, or McCabe, you know, who was paid a bribe by Hillary Clinton in the form of a campaign contribution by Hillary's buddy Terry McAuliffe to McCabe's wife, who was running for a legislative seat in the state legislature, who was paid $700,000 in campaign contributions by Hillary in Virginia, a state which allows you, whatever you don't spend on the campaign, you can put in your pocket. Let's follow the money on this stuff. I said this last week. Follow the money. And Peter Strzok, this is an FBI special agent, admittedly higher up. What do you think he's getting paid? $160,000, $180,000, maybe $200,000 a year, maybe, of our taxpayer money? The attorney he just hired are the, like, $1,000 an hour law attorneys who also represent Harvey Weinstein. You know, the liberal sex lecher and money raiser for the Democratic Party. I mean, these guys are pricey, these attorneys. Besides the link from Harvey to Hillary, and the obvious link you can see in his text messages from Peter to Hillary, Peter Strzok, and the link between Harvey's attorney and now Peter Strzok, where do you think Peter Strzok got the money to hire these guys, folks? Where do you think he got the money? You think he just had a spare $1 million sitting around in his bank account? He may be paid $200,000 a year, but you know, Washington, D.C. is kind of a pricey place to live. It makes you think, doesn't it? So here we have, potentially, I have no proof yet, but you know, my instincts are pretty good. Here we have potentially money being funneled to Peter, one of Hillary's allies in the FBI, the guy who removed the words grossly negligent, which would have resulted in a criminal charge on the early exoneration letter. We have Peter Strzok suddenly being able to hire some of the most expensive attorneys in the United States who represent Harvey Weinstein, one of the largest donors and donor bundlers to Hillary's campaign and Democratic campaigns of all types. We have Andrew McCabe getting Hillary money laundered through Terry McAuliffe, Hillary's buddy, to the tune of over $500,000. When are we going to see McCabe's bank account? I want to see how much of that $700,000 was spent on the campaign and how much went into the bank account, and whether it went into the bank account of just McCabe's wife and she spent it for things that had no benefit, tangential, direct, indirect, or otherwise, to McCabe himself, or whether it went into a joint bank account, or maybe it went into an account just with McCabe on it. Who knows? Who knows? But we do know that Hillary has lots of money from scamming lots of folks, including foreign governments, and getting paid $500,000 for speeches for her husband Bill by the Russians prior to the Uranium One deal, and $145 million into her foundation, which pays all her expenses, And her campaign had at least $12 million to pay to Perkins Coie, her attorneys, who then paid Fusion GPS, who then paid Christopher Steele, who then paid the Russians for the fake dossier. So Hillary has lots of money, and it seems to show up everywhere. You know, what we're hearing about right now is all the political stuff. I'd love to see the financial trail here, wouldn't you? Follow the money. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. Now, let me tell you a little something, because I don't think this is clear. I've listened and I've read a lot of stuff. Let me tie this in for you. So, Donald Trump, Ted Cruz was Donald Trump's last challenger. Follow me on this. Was Donald Trump's last challenger in the race for the Republican nomination. Ted Cruz drops out of the Republican race on or about May 4th, 2016. Follow these dates. May 4th, 2016. On that same day, Strzok sends a text message to Gray. Quote, "Now the pressure really starts to finish." Within a day or two, Strzok, and by the way, he's talking about the Hillary Clinton campaign if you read the whole text message. Within the next 48 hours, the early exoneration letter that had been drafted by Comey, that he didn't read until his July press conference, that he drafted prior to interviews of 17 key witnesses, including Uma Abedin and Cheryl Mills, and Hillary herself, the words "grossly negligent," which are needed to file a felony charge for the mishandling of confidential information, classified information, were changed to the words "extremely careless." They were changed by Peter Strzok, and they were changed sometime within the 48 hours after his May 4th text I just wrote, which was immediately after Ted Cruz drops out of the race, basically making Donald Trump the presumptive Republican nominee for president. By the way, at the time, the timing of the change of the grossly negligent to extremely careless in the exoneration letter written 3 months before the interviews, the last interview of Clinton, we'll get there because this is a fascinating timeline. There's email documentation. By the way, and this is from Mark Meadows, one of the ranking Republicans in the House. Quote, "We have email documentation that suggests the gross negligent claim in Director Comey's exoneration letter was changed to extremely careless between May 4th, 2016 and May 6th, 2016 by none other than Peter Strzok." It gets better, folks. It gets better. Follow me on this. Let me give you some of the actual texts. Okay, so we have, sorry for that silence, that's not a good thing in broadcasting, but I got so many papers here on my desk, I got to kind of follow them because I want to get them right for you. Okay. May 4th, this is an actual text from Strzok. "Now the pressure really, remember, Ted Cruz has just said I'm out. Trump is now obviously the nominee. The only thing left is the convention." Strzok writes, quote, "Now the pressure really starts to finish MYE." By the way, that stands for mid-year exam, which was the FBI's code name for the Clinton investigation. Then we have Strzok changing the word grossly negligent to extremely careless in the exoneration letter, which shouldn't even have been written yet, by Comey. This is a comment by Mark Meadows. Remember, gross negligence under the reasonable person standard is a crime. Extreme carelessness is not, however. That change is hugely significant. Had Director Comey called Hillary grossly negligent in his letter, he would have essentially been saying she committed a crime. If you folks think forward, I'm sure you saw it, but Comey's 13.5-minute unbelievable thing in July of 2016, where literally he spends 13 minutes going down a laundry list of crimes by Hillary Clinton, and then the last 30 seconds says, but we're not gonna prosecute her because no reasonable prosecutor would prosecute. Do you understand how this all ties in? Do you understand the depraved depths of dark anti-constitutional conspiracy that was at play here, premeditated? It is unbelievable. Unbelievable. So we have a I could spend 10 shows on this. Take a look at the articles. Take a look at these text messages for yourself. I think with this background I gave you, you'll kind of follow it. And by the way, I know you shook your head in incredulous wonder when you heard, I think it was Monday, that the FBI had lost, could never find, couldn't be retrieved, it was all Samsung's fault, the 5 months of text messages between Strzok and Gray, December to May 2016-2017. To give you an idea how critical that was and why somebody, and we want to know who, somebody at either Justice or the FBI, or both, and I think I know who it is, we'll get to that in a moment, didn't want those text messages out. In those 5 months, these are all the events that occurred, which you know, Strzok and Gray and others. By the way, where's McCabe's text? I want to see all his stuff. And I want to see Baker's stuff, the former general counsel of the FBI who resigned abruptly, and Straczynski who resigned abruptly last week. I want to see all their stuff. I want to see all of it. All of it. But in that 5 months, which the FBI unsuccessfully tried to, somebody at the FBI and Justice tried unsuccessfully to hide from us, thank God for the IG, the Inspector General, here's a few things that happened in that 5 months. BuzzFeed publishes Hillary's Russian dossier on January 11th, 2017, by the way. Strzok interviews Michael Flynn on January 24th. That was January 11th. On January 24th, Comey is fired by Trump on May 9th. Mueller is appointed special counsel on May 17th. By the way, I had my dates a little off. I'm sorry, it went to May 17th. Jay Sekulow called that, before they were recovered, willful destruction of evidence, and he's a damn good attorney. Here's some other things that occurred in that 5 months that they tried to conceal from us. There were conversations between Trump, National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, and Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. The completion and the publication of the intelligence community assessment of Russian interference. The briefing in which FBI Director Comey told President-elect Trump about the quote-unquote Trump dossier, which I will call the Hillary Russian dossier. Trump's inauguration. The nomination and confirmation of Jeff Sessions. Flynn's interview with the FBI, Comey's assurances to Trump that Trump was not under investigation, revelations in the Washington Post and the New York Times about various Trump figures under investigation, Jeff Sessions' recusal from the Russian probe, two top Obama Justice Department holdovers, including Sally Yates, who, by the way, is in this up to her eyeballs. What do you want to bet? She's a member of the secret society. Would you like to bet? Anybody want to bet me on that out there in my 2 million, 2.5 million listenership? I'll take that bet. Trump's tweet, remember that was in March of 2017, just 9 months ago, folks, that he was being wiretapped. The NSA director's visit to Trump Tower, I've talked about this in previous shows, after Trump's tweet and when security measures had been installed, and Trump's sudden move of the entire transition team to Mar-a-Lago, like the next day. What do you think that NSA director told him, huh? You better get the hell out of here, buddy. You're being listened to. Exactly. Trump's firing of Comey. And then the final day of the missing texts, May 17th, the appointment of Prosecutor Mueller by Rod Rosenstein. Okay. We have, let me talk about the secret society, which was part of the texts in Strzok, between Strzok and Gray, that they're secret society. Ron Johnson now of Wisconsin has come forward and said they have an FBI informant, that there really was a secret society, that they really were having meetings off campus, that there's panic in the secret society ranks, which includes, and I quote, federal judges, federal prosecutors, one sitting attorney general of a large U.S. state, and former attorney generals of the United States. I have this posted for you, folks, and under treason, and there are links in this article. You can click on those links and see more details. Quote, they communicate, there's a guy on Twitter. Let me step back just for a moment. It's all related. There's a guy on Twitter. Nobody knows who he is. He must use, you know, he's a specialist. I think he's in the intelligence community. He uses like a, you know, 100x ping. In other words, he sends a tweet and it goes through like 100 different servers. It kind of what I was talking about before. And he posts under the name of Thomas Paine, you know, a famous American patriot and lover of freedom, signer of the Constitution, etc. So, whoever this is posts a month ago, before we know anything about this secret society. Quote, they communicate with meetings over cocktails at homes via encrypted chat rooms, texting on drug cartel-inspired burner phones, and even via an email list, according to sources. Others have secured phones in the names of relatives to try and stay under the radar, unquote. Payne also tweeted, I'll summarize, that the group became more paranoid, you know, after the kind of the deep state plot to sabotage Trump was beginning to unravel after the exposure of Peter Strzok and Linda Gray a month ago and their texts and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you can't argue with that black and white stuff. By the way, Thomas Paine, whoever this guy is, runs an intelligence website called True Pundit. True Pundit. Take a look at it. It's pretty interesting. So he exposed the secret society a month before it was in the news and we knew about it. On December 19th, to be exact, Thomas Paine, whoever this guy is, tweeted, quote, what is this I hear about a private meeting away from FBI HQ by high-ranking FBI agents trying to get their stories and alibis straight? Question mark. End quote. There's a lot more coming, folks. There's a lot of people that are going to go down. And you'll see under the articles also, it was discovered that Barry Obama was directly involved in how the Hillary Clinton Foundation, the Hillary Clinton email deal and server deal, was being investigated, and in Loretta Lynch letting him off the hook, along with Comey, Strzok, etc. Because guess what? Contrary, and there's videotapes of him lying on air to the press, where he said the first he heard about it was in the news, you know, kind of like the IRS claim he made. Under an alias, he was sending emails to Hillary's private email account on her private server, folks. This obstruction of justice, breach of espionage-related felonies, and traitorous activities goes right to Barack Obama. And I have said that forever. Go back and listen to my shows a year ago. It all came from the top. It's going to be really interesting to see how all this plays out. I mean, it's going to be fascinating. Fascinating. And you know what else we learned this week? I mean, this goes on and on and on. I've previously did a whole show on Uranium One, where the Russians, thanks to Hillary, who received $145 million from the Russians to do so, where the Russians got 20% of the uranium, etc. I'm not going to go over that now. Go back to my show. I think it's one of the best ones the media put on. You have it from A to Z if you listen to that show. Just type Uranium One in the search bar on the website on therightsideradio.com. I told you at the time that Robert Mueller was at that time the head of the FBI, that the FBI had an extensive investigation, which absolutely proved beyond a shadow of a doubt, including through an FBI informant who will be testifying in Congress over the next month or so, folks, who had previously been under a gag order slapped on him by Eric Holder, maintained by Loretta Lynch, and okayed by Mueller and Comey, the guys in charge of this so-called Uranium One investigation. Mueller was in charge of the Uranium One investigation. He knew everything that was coming down. He withheld the information from Congress. He withheld the information from the 9-member board who had the vote to approve the deal to begin with. And I'd like to see his bank accounts. I'd like to follow the money in Robert Mueller's bank accounts. Because I have a feeling that anybody and everything associated with Hillary Clinton in any way, shape, or form has some kind of unexplained flow of money somewhere in their bank accounts, hidden or not. What would you like to bet? Any of my listeners want to bet me dinner on that? But now we find out that Mueller was also involved in another cover-up. There was an investigation related to 911A, and like we're flown out of the country. I've talked a little bit about this. I've never seen a lot of information on it till now. But the Saudi family just up and left millions of assets and were spirited out of the country within 14 days prior to 911. The FBI investigated this. And there was in Sarasota, Florida, a Saudi family who was spirited out of the country within 14 days of 911, who left all their assets and all their belongings and all that kind of stuff. And what just came out is that Robert Mueller was in charge of that FBI investigation. And Robert Mueller lied about the fact there was an investigation at all, and lied about the conclusions that the investigation the FBI had conducted had revealed, which is there was a direct connection of some type, I don't know what it is, between this Saudi family and the 911 hijackers. And all this has been uncovered just in the last week by, again, Judicial Watch. These guys are champions. Send them some money. Send them $20 or $50 or $100. Do you realize what we wouldn't know if they weren't doing their job out there for us? With their FOIAs and their dogged determination and their lawsuits against the IRS and taking on the government at every step of the way in the name of the Republic, the Constitution, you and me, and our children? Send them some money. Judicial Watch. Just put it in your search bar. Send them some money. I mean, they're unbelievable. But they managed to get documents, including formally sealed court documents. And there was a judge by the name of Zloch, Z-L-O-C-H. This is a six-year-old FOIA case. That's how much the government's been dragging its feet on it. They give you an idea of the FBI under Comey and Mueller. Zloch has now completed his, the judge, completed his review of the documents, released the documents, and guess what? I'll quote, court documents obtained by the watchdog group, that's Judicial Watch, show that when Mueller was the FBI director, he was likely involved in releasing deceptive bureau statements to cover up a direct connection between the 9/11 hijackers and a Saudi Arabian family that lived in Florida back in those days. In the meantime, Mueller and the FBI are issuing statements contrary to the facts that have just come out, which basically said, A, there was no connection. They weren't doing an investigation. And if they were doing an investigation, there was no connection between the 9/11 plot and the Florida Saudi family. But these files that have now been finally obtained by Judicial Watch, the FBI's own files, contain at least three reports that say exactly the opposite. Basically, the FBI found a number of connections between the Saudi family and, quote, individuals associated with the terrorist attacks on 9/11/2001, unquote. This is our special counsel now, folks. That, that make you feel good. Oh, by the way, who was the president in 2011? Barry. It was Barry. And we know Barry kind of leans Islamist. We know he's all left. Well, we know he leans Islamist. Let's see, Saudi Arabia, there is... must all be coincidence, huh? Judicial Watch pointed out that Mueller may have been the one who approved the false statements by the FBI to Congress and to the public. Also, the watchdog group said that the special counsel refused to respond to several questions regarding this discovery. The organization that uncovered these details sent emails to his office, but he has not responded to any, unquote. Huh. Okay. Wow. Now, all this is boiled down to a four-page memo, which Devin Nunes, I'm about to go over 2 hours here on this show. I might set a new record tonight. That's how much stuff is going on. Or this morning. I want you folks, in addition to dropping a line to the White House, your senators, and your congressmen on that localism thing at the FCC I talked about, call 1-866-220-0044 and tell your congressmen and your senators that you want the four-page memo written by Devin Nunes released immediately. This memo, folks, it's unbelievable. But the FBI and the Justice Department, I mean, really? What planet are these people on after all this stuff? The FBI and the Justice Department has warned Devin Nunes and the House Intelligence Committee, who, by the way, under the Constitution, supervise the FBI and the Department of Justice, not vice versa, to not leak the memo, to not publish the memo, and certainly not to publish a memo until the FBI and the Department of Justice see it first. Oh, well, I bet they'd lose it, kind of like the text messages. Or like the IRS and Lois Lerner. Anyway, that memo needs to come out. You know what else needs to come out, folks? All 1.2 million pages of that terrific general inspector's backup to that four-page memo that he has dug out and given to Congress on the corruption and traitorous activities, the deep state and shadow government at the CIA, the Justice Department, and the FBI. I want to see all 1.2 million pages. If they got to pay the dwindling staff, thanks, Donald, the dwindling staff somewhere in some department to go through it for a week and take out the names, agents, and not perpetrators, but the names of sources, anything that can put anybody in danger or jeopardize future intelligence gathering, so be it. I want to see all 1.2 million pages. But right now, I want to see that memo. Call that number and demand that your congressman and your senator make sure that memo is released pronto and that it does not go to the Justice Department or FBI where it will be tampered with and delayed. Pronto. Pronto. By the way, so that you know where the Democratic Party really stands, every Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee voted against releasing the memo even to other members of Congress. They have also voted against releasing the memo to us. You know, we're the government, we pay them, but we don't get to see it. And now they have started or trying to or threatening to draft a counter memo. Now, I have a feeling that this 1.2 million pages of stuff from the IG, particularly this IG, who has demonstrated his reliability in getting back the text messages the FBI lied to us about, I got a feeling that there's nothing in the world they can draft that can do anything other than maybe that portion of their base, which is so left loony it doesn't matter, to whom 2 plus 2 is 5 and water runs uphill. You're never going to reach those people anyway. But that will tell you where the Democrats stand relative to us, relative to the Republic and to the Constitution and to the rule of law. You, me, our children, and our children's children, and the Constitution and the Republic and the democracy and the rule of law are all secondary to the ideology and the politics of the Democrats. You can also see that. I'm not going to talk any more about this stuff because there's still one thing I want to cover this morning, and I'm so far over time that's just ridiculous. So I hope you folks that need to are finishing up the show on the podcast or the website. You guys who are listening to it on the podcast and the website obviously are hearing the whole thing. And I do want to at least brush on immigration tonight because I think it's the issue of our time. I think it's the issue of our time. I think the fate of the Republic, I've told you this many times, the battle for the Republic began with the election of Donald Trump. It began, folks. It didn't end. It was one step in the beginning of the real battle for the heart and soul of America. And immigration is a huge part of the war, the political war. The war for freedom, which is breaking out. So, all I want to say is you can also use hashtag release the memo on your Twitter and Facebook feeds. Hashtag release the memo. I want to see that memo. Then I want to see the 1.2 million pages that generated the memo. I want to see the whole thing. By the way, this campaign to release the memo is so highly effective that the same Democrats who voted against even fellow members of Congress seeing it, and who voted against for sure you and me, because who the hell are we, seeing it, they are now blaming this like huge outbreak of hashtag release the memo on Russian bots. You can't make this stuff up. I swear. Look it up. Google it. I think I have an article in there. I think it's the Conservative HQ article under treason. I'm not kidding you, folks. They have to explain away the fact that 80% of America wants to see the memo. So they're saying that it's really not the public. It's Russian programmed bots that are just repeating and repeating and repeating it. I mean, it's unbelievable. Anyway, I had to get that in. We're now going to, and the number, by the way, is posted right under this audio bar. That is another number you can call. I believe I have a 202 number, and I have an 866 number. Either one of them will get to your congressman and to your senators. Use the voice prompts. Now, you may have noticed in the news, I brought this to you like 2 weeks ago, right? Ahead of the pack again. I started telling you about this war led by Eric Holder and Barry Obama to take back state legislatures to control how congressional districts are drawn so that Democrats can take back control not only of states, but more importantly, of Congress. And I talked about gerrymandering. You can put that in the search bar. It'll probably come up, gerrymandering. G-E-R-R-Y-M-A-N-D-E-R-I-N-G. And, you know, Donald Trump, crafty old fox that he is, he's on it. There's a bunch of countermeasures being taken. There's court battles on gerrymandering. There's three at the Supreme Court now. I talked about it last week, I believe. And Trump is changing the census. Barry Obama originally changed the census to include illegal aliens. I bet you didn't know that, except on this show. Barry Obama changed the census rules to include illegal aliens. That determines how much money goes to states. That determines what the count is in congressional districts. And that determines how many congressional districts and therefore how many congressional seats various states have. I think you can see why he did this. And I think you can see why the Democrats just love illegal immigration. They'd love it even more when the illegal aliens vote. Well, Trump is doing a reverse executive order. And that is, and it'll be done in time for the 2020 elections, by the way, under Trump's plan. The U.S. Census will start asking people whether or not they are American citizens. That's what Barry changed. He took out the question, are you a citizen of the United States of America? Which separated people in previous censuses to that of Barry Obama into citizens and non-citizens weren't counted for a lot of things. Trump is changing it back. So the battle for the heart of the republic, folks, is being waged on many platforms and on many fronts. There's the ones which the press waves around. I don't care which press it is. This battle over the memo, the battle over stroke, the battle with the FBI, the Department of Justice, the deep state, the shadow government, you know, you name it, the IRS, those you hear about. But then there's battles almost as important waging below the surface. The gerrymandering. How the census is done. How many congressional seats a state will have based on how the census is done. It's fascinating stuff. I'm going to be talking more about it over the next several months. Because I want you to know the extent of this war for the heart of America that is being waged right now. By us, by lots of people like us, by some, not all, of our representatives, and by the guy we hired to be the chopped cheese and wage that war. It also has to do with voting rights and all sorts of things. I'm going to talk more about it next week. Now, the last thing I want to talk about here, I'm glad I'm not one of the studios that come throw me out. The last thing I want to talk about here is the Democrats, of course, Trump laid a trap, I think. Initially, when I heard about Trump wanting to give amnesty to another million plus quote-unquote dreamers over the 800,000 that had originally been under discussion, I went, what? But the more I thought about it, I'm pretty sure that he knew the Democrats would become unhinged and that they would again walk into his trap and show their colors. Remember, I've said on many shows, Trump is a master at bringing people's true thoughts and people out of the closet. He's done it with the media. He's done it with other Republicans. He's done it with the rhinos. He's done it with the progressives. He's done it with the Islamists. He's done it internationally. The guy is a master at making people who previously operated in the darkness step into the light. From people who previously hid their real flag, he makes them raise it on their flagpole. Or he pisses them off so much they don't think about it and they raise it. I don't know what. Maybe it's a combination. But he's a master at it. And the Democrats have come out instead of saying, wow, this is great. Okay, we'll do that border security we voted for in the past that we said we're willing to do. And thanks for the extra million, basically, voters in 12 years. And instead they came out, Nancy Pelosi called it a white nationalist bill. Left-wing outfits are calling it an example of white supremacy. I mean, it's like, what? What planet are you on? The right-hand side of the aisle is going, what the hell are you doing, Mr. Trump? President Trump. Well, what are you doing? But, you know, as part of the plan, he gets $25 billion for his wall. He gets the end of chain migration. He gets at least a partial ending of the visa lottery that we've talked about, the 50,000 out to whoever that all turned out to be terrorists. And by partial, I mean those 50,000 visas stay in place, folks, but they go to people who have already been waiting in line for citizenship, which is something you probably didn't know. I'm all for that. Somebody's trying to get in here legally. They've gone through all those years and expenses and done their tests. God bless them. I'd much rather see them get a visa than somebody we know nothing about from Bangladesh who runs over people in Central Park on the East Side Highway in New York. But there's something else to be known here. Okay, so you see what the what he's done is he's brought the Democrats out of the closet. What they don't really want, they don't really care about the Dreamers or the DACA kids. I mean, this is the second time he hammered them. The first time was the government shutdown, which they got their butts kicked on. The American people looked up and went, wait a minute. You want to shut down our government for illegal aliens? Hello? And now they walked into his trap again. So instead of saying, great, thanks, Mr. President, now let's negotiate this chain migration, the visa lottery, they just said, no, it's all terrible, and you're white supremacist, and blah, 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 blah. Their true colors are showing. They don't give a damn about the Dreamers, those kids, as they call them. All they care about is the long-term change in the electorate. And while they may pick up, you know, call it 75% of 2 million votes, which, by the way, could have a profound effect in a number of states, including Florida, some of the big electoral states, that's not what they want, folks. They want ultimate, total, and perpetual control. And they only get that without a wall, without the end of chain migration, and without the end of the visa lottery as we know it now. That's the only way they get there. And it is not Republicans holding DACA kids as ransom. It is the Democrats holding kids as ransom to their political, to the Democratic political future. This is clear as a bell. They walked right into it. And, of course, by them saying we won't do the deal, that gives Donald Trump the latitude to change the deal. That's what happens. You make an offer, it's like real estate, which I know well. You make an offer, the other guy says, I don't like your offer, and you go, okay, I'm changing my offer. Here's another offer. So he came out smelling like a rose. He smells like a rose to the DACA and the Dreamers. He shows he's compassionate, which I think he is in actuality. And he brought the Democrats further out of the closet. He made them stake a claim. The other thing is, he knows, but you probably don't, and to be honest with you, I was rather shocked when I discovered it, that this amnesty, whether it's, and I don't want to call it really an amnesty, it's an extension, really, of an illegal, it's legalizing a formerly illegal pattern that was inserted into the American system by Barack Obama quite intentionally, like a poison pill. And now we're kind of stuck with it. The best we can hope for is that these, the 800, 880,000 DACA kids and the million, 1.2 million Dreamers, whatever, and by the way, Some people think that number's low. I'll know more about that next week. I'll report to you on it. I don't want to venture a guess right now, so I'll just go with what Trump has proposed. The 2 million people, the best we can hope for is that 25% will be conservatives to begin with, and that over time, most of those will understand the values of the American Republic, American freedoms, capitalism, self-reliance, limited government. I mean, it's the best we can hope for. The alternative is to keep the system we have now, in which case, instead of 2 million people that at least we can hope to assimilate into our system as viable Americans, we're going to get hit with 1 million or 2 million people a year that we have no control over, who are absolutely, positively not going to be assimilated, in most cases, not all, but in most cases, don't want to be assimilated, and who are never, ever, ever going to vote for the Republic and the Constitution. They're going to vote their own welfare interest, which will be doled out to them lavishly by their Democratic masters. Because, folks, this amnesty is the first of seven, or the last of seven. Number one, in 1986, this is when Ronald Reagan got rolled. There was a blanket amnesty for 2.7 million illegal aliens. The border wall and the border security never got done despite the Democratic promises. There was an amnesty in 1994, a temporary rolling amnesty for 578,000 illegal aliens. There was an extension amnesty in 1997, which was an extension. It kind of sounds like DACA, doesn't it? This is the playbook of the Democrats, folks. This is what they do. An extension of the rolling amnesty that I just talked about in 1994. There was a Nicaraguan Adjustment and Central American Relief Act amnesty in 1997. 1 million illegal aliens were granted amnesty under that deal. They were from Central America. There was a Haitian Refugee Fairness Act amnesty in 1998. An amnesty for 125,000 illegal aliens from Haiti. There was a late amnesty in the year 2000, an amnesty for some illegal aliens who claimed they should have been amnestied under all the previous amnesties, including the 1986 amnesty. And then there was a Life Act amnesty in the year 2000, which was a reinstatement of the rolling amnesty, which got another 900,000 illegal aliens. So, folks, if you add up all those numbers, we're somewhere in the neighborhood of, let's say, 2.7, 2.3, 5.5, somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 million, 5 to 6 million illegal aliens have been granted amnesty already. And most of those illegal aliens in our chain migration have brought in seven or more, in most cases, untenuated, distantly related family members. Do the math. That's 30 million people. You wonder why the electorate is changing? Do you understand what the Democrats want here? And let me tell you, and I'm going to end with this. What they want has nothing to do, or nothing good to do, with your children and your children's children. So this show has come full circle. It is about our children and our children's children. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Thanks for listening to me for such an extended period, this show. I'll be back at you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.